You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio, the radio station that likes to give you good news for your soul. And I'm here with Tony St. Tone.
Mm-hmm, that is me.
My name is Janie Beauclair, and we welcome you to our show today.
Welcome back, by the way.
Hi.
In China.
Yes, I am so happy to be back, I gotta say. I've been in China for the last 10 days, visiting some factories with a client of mine looking to have some products made for my promotional marketing company. But it was quite the eye-opener. I had not been there before. It was an experience that I absolutely will never forget. And today's show is going to be dedicated to the people that I met and what I learned along the way over the last 10 days and how a small trip like that can really open your eyes on a grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Miss Donna on the show last week.
Yes, I had Donna Madolvin on the show, and we talked for quite a bit. It was great because we were catching up because we are friends, and she was just telling me about all the different places that she had just recently been and all the things that she's doing with a new record and stuff. And it was really cool because I love the fact that she's actually out there singing now. She has a very similar experience like you where she reinvented herself later on in life.
She was singing early
on and then stopped singing for whatever reason, if she was told she couldn't, or she was told she's not good enough, or whatever the reason was,
mm-hmm.
she stopped singing, and then she started following the band around back in Tampa, and she started singing again. I think it's great.
I think it's awesome. I think it's great. When you put your dreams and desires on the side and decide at any point in life to go for them and make major shifts in your life, I mean, it can only be good no matter what the outcome is. It can only be good because your brain obviously is going to be so happy to have attempted and pushed forward with something that you stuffed in the back for so many years that you can't help but have great things come from it.
Well, you know, the funniest thing about reinventing yourself and when I wrote the song is a lot of us have these certain dreams that we start out with, and then society comes along or life takes different turns, and you just sort of push them aside. And,
yeah.
and I can't tell you how many people say to me, you're still playing music?
I know it.
Especially on Facebook. I get that quite often because they remember me playing music in high school.
With you again.
Or
yeah.
when I was 20 years old and 30 years old. And being a musician, you start off with all the same dream. And then one by one, people start dropping off. It's like, oh, I used to play drums in high school. Oh,
then
I used to play drums
married.
In college.
Then I had to raise a family.
Yeah, and they all slowly stop. And then there's a handful of us that just keep playing because this is what we do. There's really no reason to stop.
And so do you think that that's because your love and passion for what started out to be a hobby is so strong that it overtakes the desire to, work longer hours or whatever? Because you have to cut in a space of time in your life to be able to keep your craft up.
Yeah, but you know what? I turned my craft into a profession, and I left Connecticut to do that.
Right.
That's the difference. The difference is that everyone that I grew up with in Connecticut knew that there's only a certain amount of shows that you can do in Connecticut.
And you had to leave in order to make it happen.
So if you want to pursue music for a living, you need to go where you can play music every day.
Sure.
And for me, that was Tampa, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, then I became a full-time musician. That's all I did. And it's making that type of a sacrifice.
And a lot dedication.
A lot of us aren't ready to do that. It's a scary step.
Yep.
Because what if you go there and you can't?
Well.
Then you go back.
That's what I was just saying. It's a great outcome either way, because even if you don't make it at whatever you are setting out to do, the learning lessons along the way are always huge, you know.
Yeah.
So. I didn't catch the show, but I'm going to go on humanitarianradio.com and click on Donna's picture so that I can see the, you know, listen to the past show. And you can do that with any of the shows that you've missed. So just hop on there and click on the face of the beautiful person that was on our show and listen to them. Listen to some old ones and some new ones and play the field because there's a lot of different information out there.
So we're going to take a very short break, very, very short, and then we're going to come back with Janie and her trip to China.
I'm living here in a state of abundance. I'm counting blessings that I never saw before. 'Cause I'm the ruler of this kingdom I call.
affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musicians. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com.
Mama said we can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes. For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
Hey, this is Janie from Artistic Journey. Start off your new year with a new marketing strategy. Whether it's for your company or your personal goals push, let Artistic Journey help you find the unique way to show off your endeavor. With over 20 years of marketing experience in big corporations and homegrown businesses and everything in between, Artistic Journey can help you pave a new product path or an event marketing path. Check out ArtisticJourney.com. See the wide array of marketing merchandise available for you to put your logo on for your next big event, your personal party, or your big corporation marketing push. Get into the swing of 2014 and get your business in motion with an artistic promotion.
So we are back here with Janie Beauclair, the lovely Janie Beauclair, who just came back from China. It was her first time out there, and she was in Hong Kong, Beijing, and all over the place. And I'm very curious to learn a little bit more about it, because since she got back, I haven't been able to talk to her as much as I'd like.
We haven't caught up yet.
Yeah.
Haven't shown you pictures.
So, Janie, tell us a little bit about just flying from Los Angeles to China. How long is that?
Forever.
That takes forever. So,
I believe it was like 16 hours of flight, and then we had a layover for a couple hours. So, all in all, you're in the airport between customs in and customs out about 20 hours.
20 hours. Did you learn a new language while you were on the plane?
I learned some bad words.
Okay. Well, then we'll go there then.
In frustration.
Yeah.
We were in the cattle section, you know, with the rest of the herd.
So where did you go first? Did you land in Beijing or Hong Kong?
Yeah, we went to Beijing first, and then we traveled to, we didn't do anything touristy. This was strictly a business trip.
Mm-hmm.
And being in the marketing business, that is where the hottest spot in the world for factories are that create all these products that I put logos on. So
right.
I work with all these guys on a regular basis, but this was the first time that I actually went out of the country to see factories. So that being said, we were in more of the underbelly of the country than the what everybody sees.
Right. You didn't go to the China.
We didn't
the
go
wall,
anything
Great Wall
tourist.
Of China or anything
no.
like that. Right.
No, no.
But you got to see all the factories and how these people work and what
and
they
how
do.
They live and what their daily routine is. We were there 10 days. You really got to... You got an eye-opener for how the country lives.
Right.
And how the people are and feel and behave and, you know, look at you and
mm-hmm.
things like that. What was really interesting for me and the biggest eye-opener was how happy people that are outside of the cities in these rural areas are. I think for me that was the biggest eye-opener because I'll give you, like, just a short rundown of factory life that we observed in our factories. People live there at the factory or put up in apartments by the factory 8 months of the year. As in, we met a young lady that had been working at the factory for 12 years, and I think she was 35, and she had a 12-year-old daughter, and she goes to the factory, which is away from her town where her family lives, for 8 months of the year, and then goes home. Spends a little time at home and goes back again to the factory.
So let me understand this correctly. So she is put up in an apartment, goes to work every day.
Yeah.
For 8 months out of the year.
Yeah.
But her family lives somewhere else?
Her family lives an hour or so away, and the parents take care of the children.
Oh.
The elders raise the kids in that country.
So is that normal?
It's normal for them.
Well, as I'm saying, that's a normal lifestyle for Chinese.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was questioning because she said, you know, this young lady said that it was her daughter's birthday. And I said, oh, that's too bad that you're not getting to spend the day with your daughter on her birthday. And her comment was very casual. Oh, I never get to spend this day with her. She was fine with it. Like, oh, no, 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 I'm never there for the birthday.
Gotcha. So it's very normal.
Very different than the attitude here of, you know, I got to spend my kid's birthday with my kid kind of thing. It was very,
right.
very different from that.
Right. But if that's the lifestyle that you're used to, then
exactly.
that's the lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah. One factory we went to didn't have a restroom.
Ah.
That was interesting. You literally had to use the restroom out in the field.
It was an open field.
It was an open field with three barking dogs in cages.
And that's, again, considered
casual.
Normal. Like.
Yep, that was every day going about your business. There were half men and half women that worked at that factory. And they could give a crap, if you will.
Well, I mean, it was just like, look, this is that's what you have to
yeah.
do. That's what you have to do.
Yeah,
just go
yeah.
do your business and come back to work, and you're fine.
Exactly. And they all take time in the middle of the day, like in Mexico, how they have a siesta.
Yeah.
They close for 2.5 hours.
In the middle of the day?
In the middle of the day.
Really? See,
yeah.
I would have never thought that.
We saw some of the coolest things at lunchtime because, you know, we don't close in the middle of the day. So we were
no.
still doing our business. We were stopping here and there and going to these places. We went to the World Trade Center. And that building is like 30 stories of all these different countries selling product, you know, who you can deal with kind of thing.
Okay. This is in China again.
And this was all offices. And in this case, it was lunchtime. So we walk in one door and knock on the door and we open the door and walk into this office. And there's like five girls doing exercise to a TV exercise program on their lunch. We walk in another door, and there's a ping pong tournament going on with these four guys for their lunch. We walked in another door, and it was a bunch of older guys in their like 60s to 70s, and they were playing like a really fierce game of cards.
Wow. So it's a, you know, I always thought China was like, you know, really hardcore as far as working like 20-hour days and barely getting
Yeah,
I
wasn't getting that at all. I mean, they definitely are very dedicated, and it doesn't matter if it's Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. They go every day.
Right. So they're obviously
they put some
honed
time
into their
in.
Craft to go, and we need to do this, we need to get it done, and that's what we do.
Yeah. But it was cool to see that they do their own thing. Like the girls that were exercising, we actually got in and did some of their exercise with them. We walked right in, and I'm like, oh, don't stop. And so we were doing their little routine with them, and they were giggling, and it was funny.
Like,
they
look
didn't
at these American
English.
Chicks trying to do some kung fu.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. The ping pong guys, they gave us the left eye look only fast enough not to miss the ball, and
right.
they were like, they were in match, you know.
Well, listen, they're competitive.
They're like, don't be messing with the game.
Yeah.
And then the older guys, they were like, no, this is the boys' club. No women allowed. You go.
At least they told you how they felt right up front. They're very straightforward. I think it's great that they actually take that time to break up their day.
Yeah.
You know, in American society, what we end up doing is taking that half-hour lunch if you're
stuffing down
five.
Some food, catching up on your emails, texting everybody you got
to
answer.
Yeah, and then just coming right back to it and going,
breathing.
Okay. And then, you know, fighting traffic or whatever else, where a lot of the rest of the world, I should say, likes to take that time to just, hey, chill.
One of the young ladies is a salesperson for one of the factories, and she brought us to have a massage courtesy of the factory, which was a whole other story. My point, though, is that she said to me that she goes 2 to 3 times a week for a massage at this factory at lunchtime. So that's what she does for her. She takes an hour and a half and has a massage done.
I think we should put that into American state law, you know.
Everyone
like has to
it.
Get a massage during lunchtime.
So let me tell you about the massage real quick.
Sure.
She brought us to an institute of blind people. It was blind people doing the massage.
Okay.
And so this was their way of getting these people into society, giving them, you know, responsibility and a way to feel really good about themselves. There was at least a dozen girls and guys there. They ranged from probably 20 to 45. There were 6 or 7 of us all getting massages from the same factory. And these guys were great. And I thought, wow, isn't this a cool thing to do for these people? You know, you're not putting them in a home and, oh, you're blind, you can't, you know, be part of
society.
Life.
Yeah, you're allowing them to take responsibility and to just feel good about themselves and say, hey, I can contribute also. I have something to contribute.
Yeah, it was it was a really great feeling to be not only massaged by someone that had great talent, because the loss of their eyesight enhances the feel of their fingers, you know,
right,
that
their
sense,
touch,
the
yeah,
sensory.
Uh-huh.
And so their ability to massage was phenomenal. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think they should teach massage to people in our country that are visually impaired, because, wow, what a difference you can make in somebody's body. But I felt like there was something magical happening in the room with allowing these people to contribute to our good feeling. They were feeling it back. You know, they were getting it back from us in our delight for the massage. So I thought that was really cool.
Oh, well, that sounds really cool.
Then I had a cupping treatment done, which I had never done that before. And that's like ancient Chinese secret of medicine man. The young lady who brought us and scheduled us for the massage, her great-grandfather is an Asian medicine man. And he had passed not long ago, and she was telling me about different things that he very much believed in, and one of them was this cupping process. And basically what they do is they take these little glasses, like you drink out of, it looks like, but they're very rounded, and they fill the glass with flame, like they turn on like a Bic, like a long stick, like you'd light your fire with, and they run the stick into the glass, and it lights the glass on fire on the inside. Then they flip the glass over very quickly, and they put it on your back, and they turn it to the right, and it takes all the oxygen out of the cup, which makes the flame instantly go out, but it suctions onto your back. So the feeling alone is crazy, and you're wondering if you're going to get burned, and you certainly do not at all. But what was interesting about that was that technique of cupping is to pull toxins out of your body. And this is what the Chinese believe is a method of purification, where in our country, you know, we do juicing and we do all that kind of thing. But this was more of a way to detox without putting something inside of you, you know, without putting something in your mouth. So what happens is in the first few minutes, the spots stay very, very red when they take the cups off. And it's almost like, you know, getting a hickey where somebody's sucked on your arm or whatever. So they stay really red. But as the day goes on, they will turn almost to looking like a bruise. And the bruise, it's not actually a bruise. It's actually the toxins from your body coming to the surface of your skin where they can be released into the air out of your pores. So very cool technique. I thought that... you know, I had a whole bunch of spots. I had some surgery in my back, so my spots around where my artillery is in my back was darker than the rest of my back. So to be expected, but very cool. It lasted probably, I don't know, maybe a week, those spots. And then all of a sudden they were gone. And today I realized that the massage I had a week ago really, really affected my body in that it loosened up everything. So I think that although it's a week delayed reaction for me to figure it out, I think that the massage and the whole cupping thing was an awesome treat for my body. Something else that was part of their health process was eating dates with Melaleuca oil. And we were given gifts of these date sticks. It looked like a stick of gum, but it was just processed dates, dried in some fashion. And this was something that they felt very strongly, that chewing on this gum with the Melaleuca oil to it was something that was a great digestive tool for your body and helps to, you know, alleviate some of the sicknesses that go on, is how they believe. So that was a pretty much an eye-opener. Now, craziness happens when you go to eat because the food is just so different from the American version of Chinese food. Chinese food, in my opinion, in America is nothing like Chinese food in China. As in, they're very fishy over there. They're very squid and whelk fish and huge, huge carp and things of that nature. There's just some really wild looking fish. They bring out, serve it on the table with the full head and his teeth looking at you.
And it's very entertaining to have your dinner look back at you, I got to say.
Must be delicious.
The aromas were definitely non-appetizing, and they loved
it. You say the aromas of what aromas? Of the...
of the stinky fish products.
Well, that's fish. That's what's...
Yeah, I was just, you know, I was surprised at how swampy fishy it smelled at the dinner table. Because you had a variety. We had a factory that took us out, and they were just absolutely awesome as far as hospitality, I got to say. All the factories were just very, very nice about that. But they took us out for this fabulous lunch, and they just ordered for us, and it was the factory owner, our driver, and my friend and I, and they kept bringing one dish after another after another. There was probably 30 different dishes on the table by the time it was all over.
Did you feel like Indiana Jones? Remember Indiana Jones? There was a scene where he's like, oh, look, monkey brains. And,
yes.
Oh, eyeballs. It's a delicacy here.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going, I know it's a delicacy and people would really like this, but I really don't care for it.
Well, they were eating fish brine like we eat potato chips. Now, fish brine is little baby shrimp. And that's usually in America what we put in our fish tanks to feed the fish with.
Right, right. Right.
And it's
so,
got that little aroma to it. It's got a strong fishy smell. And they eat
like
that.
Like anchovies.
Yeah, the cab driver is like snacking on that in the car. And I'm going, ew, what's that smell? Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? They have a different diet. Would you say that?
Completely different.
So let me ask you this question. Here's an interesting question. What was the average body size? Were
small.
They? Small.
We were giants. I'm 5'4", and I was
right,
a giant.
But as far as was anyone overweight?
No, didn't see anybody overweight.
Okay.
Nobody that was from their nationality.
Because I was going to say America is known as the obese country, and I'm just curious to see what they're eating there. Now, you said they eat a lot of rice. Rice is part of every
meal.
They
eat a lot of noodles. Rice. And which was really different because the noodles that we have in America that represent the Chinese way of eating were nothing like the noodles that they had there. Theirs were like big, fat, heavy, almost earthworm-like.
Yeah, thick.
Thick, real thick. And the rice was definitely more, it had like a soft, glazy, you know, our rice is perky and you try to fluff it and all that stuff. Over there it was more wet and mushy, like, wasn't as appetizing for me.
So let me ask you this then, too. Is Chinese food here when you go to a Chinese restaurant?
It's not Chinese food.
It's not Chinese
food.
It's
American
food. It's Americanized Chinese food.
Totally.
It's almost like saying, like, you go to Taco Bell and you're like, that's Mexican. You're like, no, that's not Mexican. That's Americanized.
Exactly.
But real Mexican tacos or whatever. Yeah.
They did have Burger King, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried Chicken. We did go eat at the Kentucky Fried Chicken with one of the factories for lunch one day.
Really?
Experience of its own.
How was that? Because I tried that. I did that when I was in Korea. We went to a Pizza Hut, and it was probably the worst pizza I ever had.
Yeah, Pizza Hut was the worst ever. We did go there at the airport. And even at the airport, where you'd think it was like the American Pizza Hut, oh, no, it was terrible.
No.
Terrible.
No.
Yuck-ola.
It's just different types of food, because I think what happens is yes, it's standardized for the franchises, but in essence, you know, when you're in these places, they don't have access to the same types of food.
Yeah, well,
and quality
control
is different.
The menu only had like 3 or 4 things on it, where we have, you know, a zillion.
Yeah.
The teas that they offered you, like, you know, your iced tea, there was like 10 flavors of that, ginseng tea and green tea and, you know, everybody and their brother's tea.
Oh, I like that.
One of your favorite
flavors.
That's
my favorite, yeah. Everyone in your brother's tea.
I'm not real big on sucking on the heads of swimming critters, like prawns and shrimp and all of those critters. They suck on the head.
Now, you said there's a lot of fishy. It seems like where you were.
We're right on the water.
You're right on the water.
Yeah.
So again.
Fishing industry was huge.
Huge, because
totally.
if you're.
But that's
in those
why
locations, I'm sure if you went to the middle of China, your menu would change.
We were in the middle of China at one point, and that was more lamb, goat, meaty stuff.
More meaty stuff.
Some questionable. I thought maybe Persian or Angora. I wasn't sure.
Basically, because where you live definitely has an influence on what you eat.
Yeah.
It just can't help it. If you're from New England, New England clam chowder and Boston lobster and all that.
Do you know that Boston lobster there was $800 in U.S. dollars to get one Boston lobster because it's got to be flown in. It's got to be fresh.
God.
$800.
That poor lobster has to travel 15 hours to be eaten.
Yeah, well, he sleeps through it, so he's all right.
Oh, he's okay.
So let's talk about food for a second and come back around to what I wanted to share about people and their disposition. Because I was looking, while I was there, I met a group in Hong Kong of people that were involved in the horse racing industry internationally. And what they do is they govern, just like the Olympics, how they make sure that the Olympic athletes are not on steroids, would they make sure that the jockeys and the horses are not being genetically altered or any of that type of thing.
Right.
While we were there, we shared breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the same hotel for a few days, so we got to know these people. On CNN, they said, Australia voted the happiest country in the world to live in for the fifth year in a row.
Really?
Yeah. And so we got like 40 Australians here, and I'm going, well, how come you guys are so happy? You know,
oh,
basically,
we're so happy.
I did my little interview of, you know, what makes you happy, because we just witnessed all these little Chinese people that were extremely happy in really poor areas that had absolutely nothing in relation to what we have. They didn't live in houses like we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they lived in rundown apartments and very old cities.
Right.
You know, bathroom privileges at a bare minimum. And, you know, food was mainly what they grew. If
right.
they were growing it, they were eating it. So you go to there, and then you go to Hong Kong, which is a bustling city where all of the Asian people we met there had mean, mad faces and were very pushy and chubby and were not the happy people that we had met out in the country.
Right, but think about the environment.
Yeah.
And the environment has so much to do with it. You've
totally.
Got that hustle and bustle, and you're just struggling to just keep
going.
Keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was interesting because, like, I literally had a woman stuff me into a cab one day, like pushed me, and then a lady in the airplane pushed me to get out of the seat when the plane stopped. Like, she would have stepped right over the top of my body to get out kind of thing.
Right.
But it was always, it was Hong Kong, the city of, that was such an eye-opener of the not happy people that were there.
Did you say, well, again, do you think it's similar to New York City, where you get to New York City and, you know, if you've ever been to New York City, sometimes people can be a little aggressive or
yeah.
a little rude.
Yeah, it was very much like that, I want to say. But so anyway, coming back to, I'm talking to these Australians and I'm asking them about
what makes them happy.
Yeah, and so I looked up online and they said that one of the factors that they decide on what makes a country happy is their food.
Foster's beer.
Imagine. So if you're having stinky shrimp, you might not be so happy. They're having steak on the Barbie. They're delighted.
Shrimp on the Barbie, steak on the Barbie, Foster's beer.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. None of them knew that their country was voted that for the last 5 years, but they were all very happy, bubbly people. I mean, they all got along great and were
well,
having
you know what
a
I think
great
was
time.
About Australia is they don't really get involved in all the BS
in the war.
That goes on with the wars
right.
and stuff like that. You don't always ever hear Australia going to war. It's like it's all the European countries and Eastern countries and America, of course, obviously.
Now,
but Australia seems to be like, nope, we're going to be Switzerland. We're just going to stay out.
Yeah, like just like Costa Rica. I mean, there's a lot of non-fighting countries. So I was looking online at countries and things that are affected by war, no war, blah, blah, blah. So Forbes came out with a list saying who are the happiest countries and who are the saddest countries in the world and why. And so the list, the top five happiest were, of course, Australia, then Norway, Sweden, Canada, and New Zealand. And they said because those countries enjoy peace, freedom, good health care, quality education, a functioning political system, and plenty of future opportunity.
Hmm.
Who are the saddest?
Oh, boy.
Chad, Congo.
Where's Chad? Hold on. Chad? Chad? Okay.
Chad. Must be close to Congo. Central Africa, Afghanistan, and Yemen. And those are the saddest because they are the least prosperous, war-ravaged. Their freedom of expression is limited. Their education is non-existent. And their violence is the norm.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise. I'm like, wow, what makes you the happiest or the not so happiest? These results were based on 142 countries governing 96% of the world and 99% of the global population is who they polled to make this determination.
Right, because there could be some small little group that's happier than anybody. And
yeah.
They're just not part of the political polling.
So, interestingly, again, they mention Africa here. Last night, the band Saint Tone, Tony's band, had a gig, and I was talking to this gentleman who had just come back from Africa, and he is doing some contract work and was in the villages. And from the villages, he spent a few months doing some construction, basically, to help, you know, put roofs on and build walls and paint, da-da-da-da-da. And from there, he went to Dubai, which is a bustling, very well economically satisfied city, one of the wealthiest cities in the world.
They're building like crazy in Dubai.
So what he was saying, I was telling him about the people of rural China versus the people in Hong Kong, my experience, and he says, wow, it's really interesting that you say that because I was just reviewing my experiences. I just got back from Africa a couple days ago. He said in the villages, the people walked around like zombies as if they had no hope because they could see no future. And you could see it in the way they carried their shoulders and how they walked slumped over and looking down at the ground. But then you go to the city of Dubai and everybody's dripped in diamonds and gold and they're walking with their head held high and proud and see like huge futures for generations underneath them. And he was like, you know, it blows me away that you're only talking a couple hours away from the most poverty-stricken areas where there's no hope and the areas that are hugely wealthy and one of the wealthiest places in the world.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought, wow, that's a really interesting observation how, you know, Hong Kong and these little cities were the same scenario. But it's the same New York City and, you know, we've got that here in America too.
So do you think money has something to do with it?
Definitely.
As far as the happiness?
Definitely.
Or is it just more the freedom of expression?
I don't think it's
having
just...
Having enough to eat, you know, it's the basics. Let's go
right.
to just the basics.
That's
like,
what
hey,
I'm thinking.
We need food to eat. We need shelter from the weather. If we get the basics, then anything else is like a plus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but if we can't grow our own food and we're starving over here, that's a huge difference.
Then we got a problem.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Totally.
Well, I was going to say, what makes you happy? It's like, well, just imagine yourself right here and now where you are. Now take yourself and put yourself in the middle of the woods like that TV show, Naked and Alone, or Naked and Scared, where they just put these two people
Sometimes
out.
Naked is scary even if you're not in the woods.
Yeah. Well, they just put them there and it's like, here, survive.
Yeah.
Make your own shelter. Find food to eat. What are you going to do? And you're like, oh, my God, I thought just a chair would be, like, awesome.
Yeah, you know? Right. And speaking of happy, you know, a couple weeks ago we were praising Pharrell, the musician Pharrell, for coming up with a song named Happy and creating a 24-hour video around it.
Mm-hmm.
Pharrell was being interviewed in Hong Kong while we were there.
Oh, cool.
And everywhere we went, we heard the song Happy. And I thought that that was so cool. I didn't quite know whether they got it, you know, the meaning of it and all of that.
Well, I mean, it's a simple enough song.
But
it's
they
just
were
happy,
very, China likes Pharrell a lot. They had a massive concert. They showed it on TV, and it was like huge. A lot of population there.
Yeah, he's
and,
happy.
And then he was playing in all the cabs, and yeah. So yay to Pharrell. He's making his way around the world and sharing some happiness of his own.
Oh, I think that's awesome. You know, it's just a simple song, but something like that to have a song like that out there.
Totally.
And have it received by people around the world.
All around the world, whether they speak the language or not.
Yeah. And then when they find out the meaning, like, oh, I get it. Okay. That's a perky, happy song.
So, yeah. So let's take a quick happy break for our sponsor so they're happy with us.
Yes.
And then we'll come right back, and I've got some more interesting stuff to tell you about.
So listen up. If you're on the market for a graphic designer, you know, someone who can create logos, websites, etc., along with radio ads and video, well, there's no need to look any further than ST Productions. It's your one-stop shop for all your graphic, audio, and video needs. ST Productions will get it done while saving you money and having fun. So keep them in mind, ST Productions, an audio, video, graphic design service. Gilman Amps, we create the tone in your head. Custom-built guitar and bass tube amplifiers.
Hey everybody, this is David Gilman from Gilman Amps. If you need any repairs, modifications, or restorations of your vintage or modern tube equipment, as well as custom builds, I'd love to hear from you.
For more information, check out their website, GilmanAmps.com, and Facebook, /GilmanAmps. We create the tone in your head.
So if you are just joining us, we are talking all about a trip that I just took to China, and more so how I've learned about the behaviors of people and quite a few different varying people, because I also met a group of Australians there, and I also met a gentleman from Dubai there. So I learned a lot about different personalities, and we've been just discussing that on our show today. So that brings me to, I've also been infusing the Who's the Happiest Country and Why? And that brings me to Happiest People on Earth. On March 7th, there was a survey that was revealed, and it was done by a bunch of psychiatrists at varying schools around the country, Yale, etc. So it says, what happens when you look at the happiest people in the world and you scientifically analyze what they have in common?
What do you get?
What do you think it might be that makes the happiest people in the world? What do they have in common?
I think they are very satisfied with what they're doing.
Okay.
I think they feel like they can express themselves easily, and they feel limitless. You know, like there are possibilities out there. You know,
well,
it's almost like you're allowed to dream.
Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense.
There you go.
The answer is relationships.
Okay, I'm not sure how off I was on that.
There was a clear answer to what differentiates people from everyone else. It wasn't money, it wasn't smarts, it wasn't age, gender, or race. It was all about social relationships. There's a book out called The 7 Principles of Positive Psychology that was written based on this study, and it says that it turns out that there was one and only one characteristic that distinguished the happiest 10% of everybody. And this was a specific research thing that was done at Harvard, 1,600 undergraduates. They found that these 1,600 undergraduates, their social support was far greater predictor of happiness than any other factor, more than their grade, more than their family, their income, their SAT scores, their age, their gender, their race, blah, 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 blah. It was more important that they had social support and happiness and love in their life than anything else.
So just to reiterate what you're saying is the number one thing was relationships, as far as your relationship with other people, not
socially.
Not necessarily a personal relationship,
right,
like a spouse, more socially, they have support. They have people they can share things with.
Yep.
Okay.
They're communicating with people.
Right. Well, then you could see why depression sets in with certain people, because they can't.
They're not communicating with anybody,
or they're not clicking in.
Right.
You know.
Now, something else that was interesting is they also did. They talked to a group of 80-year-old people.
Okay, and what made them happy? I'm sure that changes quite a bit.
Being loved. That's what was their number one thing. Not what they had done in their world, in their lifetime. Not how big their family was or what their successes were. It was being loved.
What I would imagine at that age, that's the thing that you're looking for the most, is someone that still cares for you.
Well, this is really interesting, too. What you do for work governs how happy you are, which I think most of us know that, but I don't know if everyone realizes to what degree that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're saying is if you're
if you're in a job that you don't love, then your happy meter is less than half. But if you're in a job that you love, it governs your happy meter totally. And they're saying, how do you pick the job that you love? Well, look at what your strengths are currently and go for the strengths that you currently have, as opposed to forging something you maybe have been dreaming about but have no experience in. They're saying you can take the fast train to happy in your job by looking at your strengths and starting there to change over. And then if you want to go for a dream and try something new, you're already in a satisfied position. Therefore, it makes your journey easier when you're going towards the next steps.
Okay, that makes sense. So if you have good social skills...
Well, they say starving artists are happier than any other job in the world.
Yeah, I could see that.
Right? Because they're doing what they love, just like you, being a musician.
Yes.
You know, you're not...
I'm not starving.
You're not, what's his name, Bill Gates.
Right. No, but
but you're happy.
But there's a lot to be said about that. And I, in the conversations that I've had with people in the past about what I do, there's a lot of envy there because they say, you get to do what you love. And I says, I always say, well, you can too. You can do what you love.
What is it you love?
You know,
first of all, you got
to
figure that out.
If you love to do pottery or if you love to run your own business, you can do it while still working a 9-to-5 job. And that's the one thing I got to say. When I first started, I was always working a full-time job and then doing music on top of it. So it wasn't something that just fell into my lap. It's something that I worked at.
Well, and that goes right into this next little paragraph here. It says, it's recommended that you plan your happiness because those who plan their happiness, as in take a few hours to do and schedule the things that make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that are planning happy activity, things that please them into their day, are some of the happiest people out there. So let's take a little clue from those guys.
I like to plan a massage once a day like that, like your friend had.
Yeah,
that'd
totally.
Be fun.
Totally. I'd like to plan a lot of things.
You know, what's interesting is that if you, as you say that, it's really something that is possible. You know, you would go, yeah, I'd like a massage every day too. Well, if you really did want a massage every day or at least once a week, if you looked into it, they're really not that expensive. You can get a massage for $15 or $30 or depending if you want a half hour or an hour. So it's something that is feasible because you might spend that on dinner. You might spend that on just frivolous things, going to the bar and having a couple of drinks.
Yeah, listen to this little sentence here. It goes right in line with what you're saying. What is interesting is that there's often a gap between where people say what they want to spend their time doing and what they actually take the time to spend their time doing. A large percentage know what projects they want to do, but they can't get the energy up to do them, or they spend a lot of time doing things that do not infuse them.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like focus on what makes you happy, and then find a way to schedule it into your time frame, whether it's a 5-minute meditation or it's a half-hour vocal lesson or...
But see, that's what I mean. Like when people ask me how did I go about doing what I've done, and I have to use myself as a reference because that's the only thing I really know
mm-hmm.
best. I've always said, well, it's like you take the time to do it. Like if you really love building amplifiers, then go build amplifiers.
By all means, absolutely. So this is a great segue for our song of the day. And our song of the day is called The Best Is Yet to Come. Because I feel like it's an inspirational song that reminds everybody that, hey, you know, no matter if your life has been good, bad, hard, easy, soft, whatever, whatever, the best is always in front of us yet to come. So it's keep your eyes open, realize that the best is yet to come. Dream in that direction. This is by St. Tone.
Side. Grab your coat and let's go for a ride to an open field beyond the city lights. Let your thoughts run free for a while.
The Best Is Yet to Come. That can be found on the Saint Tone CD. It was a self-titled CD I did back in 2006, and that song is available on iTunes and CD Baby, etc. So just go to my website, www.sainttone.com, if you'd like to learn more about that song and other songs that I've written.
Yeah, also, hop on his Facebook and let him know what you think of that song. Somebody just brought it up to us again that was listening to some older Saint Tone music. So, we thought we'd bring it back around and play it for you and see what you think.
We're reviving it.
We are reviving it, absolutely. I also wanted to talk about Humanitarian Radio's Facebook and website. You can always catch any of the shows that you missed on the archive page. It's actually the second page on the site. You click on the person's picture, and you can listen to the show that you missed at any time from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have a Humanitarian Radio Facebook. And people have been letting us know about great things that are going on and what they're doing. And we love to share that stuff on our fan page as well as on the air. So if you're doing something great or you know somebody who is, absolutely.
Yeah,
let us know.
Yeah, that's the thing that happens very well. I think every time people come around, they say, you really should talk to this person.
Yeah, we've had some great guests that way. So keep them coming. Absolutely. So listen, I wanted to tell you a little bit about the calendar and what's going on in the world of fundraising and how to support your local humanitarian effort. It is the month of May, and we are rolling right through it. Today is Mother's Day, so congratulations to all those mommies out there. And whether you're a mommy of a pet or a person, whatever you're a mommy of, congratulations, and thanks for doing the things that you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I was going to say, we just missed Cinco de Mayo.
I didn't miss it.
You didn't miss it.
No.
We
the
also
funny thing is we went to an Irish restaurant for Cinco de Mayo. We were going to go to a
how does that work?
Well, we were going to go to a Mexican restaurant, and they wanted to charge us $10 just to walk in. And I said, why? It's just a bar.
That's twice Cinco.
Yeah.
Cinco,
I was like,
and Cinco.
$10 to walk in and then get charged for a couple of drinks. So we said, okay.
Thank you anyway. Right, right. Well, they celebrated it in China. I thought that was interesting.
Really?
They were celebrating that. And then also
Cinco de Mayo, they celebrate?
We celebrated another holiday there called May Day, M-A-Y Day.
So what do they just take on everyone else's holidays and just
now
add
America has May Day on May 1st. I don't know if you even had a clue that we celebrate May Day. It's an international holiday that gets celebrated all around the world.
And what does May Day stand for?
The factories were closed, and everybody had the day off on a Thursday. So I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. But this weekend, the 17th, we have Armed Forces Day, where you celebrate and thank the people who are out there keeping everybody safe and protected.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a fundraiser at Nancy Cartwright's house that we're performing for as the band St. Tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nancy Cartwright is the voice of Bart Simpson. If you didn't catch her show, she's definitely entertaining, and you want to grab that.
And actually, tickets are still available.
Oh, right.
Yep, so tickets are still available. It's next Saturday, so if you're listening to this...
Tell them St. Tone sent you.
Yep, just go to sttone.com, go to the shows page, and there's a link there where you can actually go and buy tickets.
Yeah,
so
and it's really,
really
cool because it's at her house.
Yeah.
It's the ninth year,
and
the fact that she lets the public come to this party is just amazing. It's always a who's who of celebrities that are there, and it's for a good cause. They give books that teach young kids how to be respectful and...
Just some basic rules of life.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's called the Happy House Organization. And if you want, you can check out Nancy's show, and she talks all about it. But it's a great, great organization that she's had running for a number
of years. Yeah, come watch the band play. How about that idea?
Yeah, you can come see the band play. So if you live in the Los Angeles area or if you want to fly in for it, we know that
we have
Janie's
a son of mine flying in for it. He's flown in for it the last few years, actually.
He's flying in for it, but it's in Los Angeles County. And again, tickets are available if you go to sttonepage.com and go to the shows page. You can find a link.
So here's another really cool idea, something new out in the world of fundraising. I found two new things that I hadn't seen before, and I thought, wow, this is a really clever idea. So they call them scratchers, and it's like you're familiar with it with a lottery where you scratch off something and you win a prize underneath it.
Okay.
Well, it's that idea, only it's for fundraising, and you earn 90% of the profit because it costs barely anything to make these cards up. So what they do is they make up a card, and it has like 50 spots on it. And every spot is covered, and you can scratch off a spot, right? So you go to your people, and you go, hey, can you scratch off two of these little spots for me? And whatever the number is underneath there, can you give me that in a donation? The highest number is $4. So somebody scratches off a two, and they scratch off a four, and now they owe you $6. Once you get the entire card scratched off, you've earned $100. So they're giving these out to schools and colleges, but also churches are doing this now and a whole variety because you can give it to 10 people. They each get their $100 scratched off in a game-like setting as
opposed
to pulling teeth, and you made $1,000.
Right, so now they're participating in what they're going to give you, and they feel like, hey, I'm contributing without having to reach into my pocket and go, do I give them $5 or do I give them $6? I really should give them $10. So now they don't have to mull over it. They go, okay, whatever I scratch, that's what I'm going to give
that's
you.
That's what I'm giving you.
So now it's a simple chance.
So the website, if you wanted to get started, they send you a little scratch-off card and a kit so you can actually see how you do it, although I just explained it's pretty hassle-free. It's called scratchers, scratchers.
.com. We'll put this link on the website.
Yeah, so
if you're
listening, scratchers.com.
You'll see it right here.
But I thought that was a really cool one. I mean, that's something I would be into doing. I think that would be fun. You know, you're like, oh, what number am I going to get? Even if you got two fours, wow, you're not even contributing $10, really?
Right.
You know? So something else that I saw that I thought was a really cool thing is they're doing... A website called mixedbagdesigns.com. They go around and get used bags. And I don't mean like plastic grocery bags. I mean like maybe your beach bag or your, something you carry to work with your junk in it, whatever, whatever. They grabbed used bags or you can order new bags. And what it is it's the fundraiser is buying bags. So... they bring a little catalog of new stuff, and you can pick a new bag, and if not, you can grab a used bag. So it's just a reusable resource. They're fabric totes. They're very fancy and very special, and know that when you're buying one, you're contributing in a different way to a fundraising cause. So that would be something good for, like, the Red Hatter ladies groups and and even church bazaar groups and things of that nature. Somebody trying to support the Girl Scouts, that could be a good thing for them.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a fun, new, clever way also to do some fundraising.
Well, there's so many ways out there, I think, that are more unique than just going in and saying, hi, we're going to do a bake sale.
Well, yeah.
Or hi, can you just donate to the cause? I'm selling, you know, cookies.
And, you know, you're halfway through the year, and a lot of times right now people forget that organizations still need help. It's not Christmas. It's not the beginning of the year. It's the middle of the year. And so people need our helping hand to keep humanity rolling in a really smooth manner and allow people to have the same kind of great things in their lives that we have in ours.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that is it for our show this week.
And well, really it sure has been a good time.
Yeah, I really thank everyone for joining us, and we will see you next week. Same bat channel, same bat time.
It's Humanitarian Radio, and we are pumping out some good news for your soul.
Have a great week.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.